It's the Mike O'Mara Show.
I don't like spam!
Welcome back to the Mike O'Mara Show. We're not going to keep this gentleman waiting at all.
No.
This is a big, big thrill for all of us. The show coming up when is it going to be? Thursday night. That's right. It's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. That's Eric Idle, and he's joining us right now. Eric Idle, so nice to have you on the program. What an honor it is to talk to you, sir.
Well, thanks, Mike. Nice to be on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
I know. I'll be singing that, by the way.
I have to do it.
You have to do it.
You know, that's a question, Buzz. Right before we went on the air, Buzz was saying to me, you must get a little tired after all these years of people just spewing out all of your material to you, because it must happen. We were waiting to have you on the show, and we were during the commercial break, and we're just going around the room
reminiscing.
And everybody is just, it's nonstop. It's going on and on to listen to all the Monty Python routines over the years, and it's inconceivable to me that all of that greatness, the Monty Python greatness, was way back in the early and mid-1970s. It feels like you guys did it yesterday, Eric, and I'm sure you've heard that before. It really is timeless stuff. It is still so fresh.
And yet next year is the 40th anniversary.
Wow.
We're calling it the Ruby Jubilee. We're going to have mugs and things.
That is so truly amazing that 40 years. Flying Circus was on from 69 to 74, is that right?
In England, yes.
In England.
I think it came to America about 73.
Right. When did you realize, was it once it came to the States, it was already big in England, when did you realize, all of you guys, that you had something really special here?
Well, I guess when we read about people in Canada protesting that it was being taken off the air. But that seemed very bizarre to us. I mean, by the time we got to England, to America, we'd finished doing it. So we weren't allowed to be spoiled by it, which is nice.
That's good. And it gives you a little better perspective on it, I would
definitely
imagine.
Definitely. And, didn't start edging for more in the next series. So we'd actually finished doing television. We moved then on into the movies.
Now, right. We've got a million questions about, obviously, Monty Python going way back. But your show, coming up this Thursday night, 8:15 at Wolf Trap, is Not the Messiah. He's a Very Naughty Boy. Tell me about that show. What can we look forward to in that?
This is what John Dupre and I wrote immediately after. We've been writing this after Spamalot. He and I wrote Spamalot together.
Right, right.
And so we thought, well, let's not just do a musical. Let's not go to Broadway. Let's do something really silly. Let's go with a symphony orchestra and a choir and soloists. So we have 106 musicians on stage.
Wow. I'm there right there.
Wow. And then we have bagpipe players come on.
Of
and
course.
I'm even playing the leaf blower, which is a new instrument I've invented, which we get a whole range, a whole scale out of, I'm happy to say.
I look forward to that. And I think the weather's going to break. It's not going to be too hot when you do that.
Good.
Because right now, I don't know where you where you're calling us from right
I'm
now.
I'm from L.A. at the moment.
It is absolutely sweltering here in D.C. So
I heard that.
Weather's actually going to be pretty cooperative, I think, for Thursday night, but who knows? I mean, I'm not a weatherman. In a film like The Meaning of Life, which is my all-time favorite,
right.
Which I wanted to ask you, what was the greatest challenge? Was it the writing itself, or with a movie like that, and so many of your movies, getting all the great material into one film?
Well, Meaning of Life never really made. I mean, it's a bit of a hodgepodge. I tried to do that as a Broadway musical, but there's no plot there, so it's very odd. You know, it's very hard. The Galaxy Song, which is my particular favorite, we are actually doing as an encore. On Thursday, we do the Galaxy Song, and then at the Hollywood Bowl, we actually get to put fireworks on for the Galaxy Song.
Oh, nice.
It's really fabulous.
And are there any besides the pyrotechnics? Anybody floating around with cables being floating over the stage?
We haven't yet got that far, but we have some pretty silly things. I mean, the miners. We have a miners' chorus, and it snows. and we have sheep. Of course, we have a guest sheep trio.
Of course.
Who come on and sing, obviously, the sheep song.
You know, Eric, I always say, I've said this for so many years, get a DVD, you put on The Meaning of Life, which I have done seriously for friends, probably more than any other DVD that I've played in my home. You sit 12 people down, 6 won't get it, and 6 will be fans forever. This was way back in the early days, where you'll get certain people that are sitting there going, oh my God, and then you'll have 6 people that are just sitting there
laughing
and want to see the entire thing. As soon as it's over, they want to see it again. How was your work received in the early days, in the the UK and hear it. So completely original, so off the wall. Did you get people that would say, "What are you doing? This is unacceptable." And sorry for the British accent. I just had to do it.
Well, yeah, I think we did. We were very, it was very much puzzling for people at first. They didn't get it, and they were kind of, and the great British middle classes were very offended and upset by it.
Good.
But be very annoyed by us.
And so that fueled the material sometimes, didn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. But then it sort of switched around. It was very strange. It suddenly became embraced, and maybe it was about the time it came into the States, you know what I mean? There was sort of like Python mania. We were trapped in a cinema when we were opening the Holy Grail.
It was the television show came. Now, did it start running in the United States after the run was finished in Britain?
I think we might still have been going out with our third series, but it certainly started in 73, and it started in all places, Dallas.
Huh.
PBS Dallas broke it first.
I forgot it was a PBS show.
No, that was what was so great about it, because it, being PBS, it was always on and always available to everybody all the time and commercial free. Yeah. So, you know, the PBS really made it happen for us, because and nobody bothered to count. Nobody bothers to do ratings on BBS because there's no advertisers to please. So,
and you know, for a young guy, and I'm 49, and I remember when it first was running here in the States, there was always just, you know, there was always a chance you might see something a little naughty in there.
Sure.
And it had that quality to it, too.
I think that's very true. I think, which is so popular in America, both of them are very, very popular.
We could say teets and violence,
yeah,
right?
We can say that.
That's so we had to modify that.
Believe it or not.
I don't want to put more money into the pocket of the fine people.
You know what? Didn't you have a story about CBS and the Janet Jackson thing?
A court today reversed their ruling and decided that CBS was not obscene with the accidental Janet Jackson incident, and that the fine was arbitrary.
So now we're all going to storm the building.
It's amazing. During a football game, of all things, you managed to see a breast. Yeah. It's like, I'm so shocked.
You know, Eric, in our world of doing this kind of radio, it has changed, and it did change significantly way we did it here. And,
I think if you hear my FCC song, which you can find on iTunes, you'll hear exactly what I think about it.
Make a note of it.
Now, would that FCC song be something?
You can't play it on the radio, I'm afraid.
Right. Damn it! I was just going to ask that whether
play
we
can it on
do
the radio. Okay. Incredibly rude.
That's the way it
Howard
goes, though.
Howard Stern can play it, and it mentions him, so he's very happy.
Now, keeping track of the pythons here, two of the pythons are no longer with us, right?
It's one. Who are you killing?
Who did I kill? We were talking.
Who
we thought for
like?
Some reason. Did you? You didn't. So is Terry Gilliam still with us?
Apparently so.
I didn't know.
He just
went to
kill Heath Ledger. But
I'm sorry.
would you mind checking?
But Graham Chapman's no longer with
Graham
us.
Chapman is deaf. He's been 20 years without us. I'm going to tell Gilliam that you think he's dead.
Please do not.
He's the American, and we can afford to spare him.
When you all paid tribute, and I'm not sure what show it was, but you all came out and paid tribute to the late Graham Chapman, and the fake urn of ashes is, you know, as an Irishman and somebody who went to so many wakes when I was growing up, and you inject a little levity in it, but I didn't even see that one coming very end. I swear, I was.
It was a 4-minute laugh. The audience laughed for 4 minutes.
I did not
see it coming. And
convulsions for those of you in our listening audience that don't know what I'm talking about. All the pythons are paying tribute to Graham Chapman, and they're doing a retrospective on the Python years. And at the very end, and it's you're laughing. But you're so moved by this comedy troupe, and at the end, and they've got the urn of Graham Chapman up, and in the end they knock it over, and it was just, oh my God, I really, because you guys pulled it off, you didn't see it coming,
right?
Because nobody thought you would go there, and then again, when people that really know Python, you all would go there. We should have known that was coming there.
Well, the audience did. I think there was one. It's certainly the biggest laugh we ever had. To be
amazing.
Honest,
amazing.
Certainly one biggest one Graham ever had. So.
Oh. And he'd love that as much as anybody else. We've obviously grown a bit older, but I don't think people ever lose that irreverent sense of humor, and that's what keeps the whole thing timeless. There's so much comedy. I was mentioning during the show, even when we were going back and on NBC, you've been on Saturday Night Live a number of times yourself, when they replayed the old George Carlin Saturday Night Live, that was wonderful humor, but you got a true sense of, you know, because of his comedy, where he was. With the Python stuff, You know, we're spewing it out there during the commercial break, and it could have been yesterday where you could have made that.
So timeless.
Well, it seems, yes, it's not anchored in time, whereas Saturday Night Live has a weekend update and it's making topical jokes, which are sort of gone in 3 or 4 years.
But Eric, what is it? I mean, there is definitely a Python-esque sense of humor. What is it that makes that humor timeless in your belief?
Well, there's an absurdity, uh-huh. and there's a silliness, and there's taking it all very, very seriously.
Right.
Everything's taken in tremendously seriously. And so you're talking about politics, and you have a ministry of silly walks. And nobody goes, that's an absurd. You know, you take it absolutely seriously as a ministry of silly walks. It's not getting enough money in the budget, obviously. So, you know, once you're off on a concept like that, it's taken deadly seriously. That's what makes it so irresistible, I think.
Agreed.
Was the success of Spamalot, you know, because of the time that had passed, was the success of Spamalot, the Tony Award, was that a surprise to you? You never know when you're going to do a Broadway play.
No. It was a total, the huge success of it. I mean, it's still on Broadway.
Yeah, of course.
Enormous success. Was ridiculous. I thought we'd make a funny show. I never thought for a second that John and I wouldn't make a funny musical and there wouldn't be people who'd like it and it would make them laugh. But this has been beyond belief. I mean, it just keeps going. You know?
I would be doing a disservice to my listening audience if we have so many people that would like to ask you some questions. Would you be willing to entertain some questions from the audience?
Sure.
Let me lock you in. Here. We're on with Eric Idle from Monty Python. Let's go to Harry in Wichita, Kansas. You're on with Eric Idle. Go ahead, Harry.
Eric?
Hello there.
Thank you so very much for the incredible humor you have given us over the years.
Eric, excuse me a second. Harry, you're not drunk, are you?
A little bit.
He's in Wichita.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Thank you, Harry. That was a nice compliment. That's our listening audience. Eric Idle gets a call from a drunk guy.
Drunks in Kansas.
A loaded man in Kansas. Just, I thought he was going to begin to cry. I swear to God.
Yeah. I'm glad you nipped that in the bud, Mike.
Let's go to Kirk in Modesto. Kirk, you're on with Eric Idle.
Hey, guys, how you doing? Eric, everybody doesn't know this, not a lot of people know, but he was once the voice in the movie Transformers, the original cartoon a long time ago. I'm a big fan, always have been. My question is, there is a little movie that came, you guys know well about, The Aristocrats.
Right.
His role in it, he tells one of the funniest jokes in it where he tells...
I've seen it. I remember that. The Penn Jillette and the Aristocrats. I mean, it was, you know, that's also, in a way, ultimate comedy of the absurd, isn't it, Eric?
Right. It was funny because he told the joke, and I'm asking, could he please somehow figure out if he could tell it again as the German who told the Aristocrats?
I don't think we're going to ask Mr. Idle to
do
shtick on the Mike O'Mara show.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, everybody told the same joke. The gloss was finding a twist on how to do the same as everybody else.
Yeah, he loved it.
Go ahead, Rob.
Eric, it is a pleasure to speak to you, and I've been a fan as long as I can remember. And you've done such a great job of incorporating music into comedy, and they walk hand in hand so well, and so it had to almost be a natural when you did Spamalot. But my question goes to another project that I love, The Ruddles.
Right.
And it was years before I figured out that actually it was not based on the documentary The Complete Beatles, because that came afterwards. It follows almost the same blueprint. It's such a great...
Well, it is actually based on that, because George Harrison let me see what was then called The Long and Winding Road.
Okay.
I found a lot of good material there. And they would never agree how to cut it. They couldn't agree, you know, which bits to leave in or out.
How did you feel? I mean, obviously, the Beatles are one of the most incredible institutions there is. When you're making a parody of the Beatles and you have George Harrison in the film, what's that like working? Do you have to step lightly?
It was rather wonderful. Neil and I were dressed as McCartney and Lennon, and people came along and asked for our autograph and ignored George. It was real.
Just like usual.
That was kind of fun.
You've obviously...
I do play Dylan, actually, at Wolf Trap. So only parody the best.
Oh, you do a little Dylan when you're in that show?
I do Dylan, yes. Dylan turns up to help Brian.
I want to mention again, Eric's nice to give us his time today, and he's starring in Not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy. That's with his teammate from Spamalot, conductor John Duprez. That'll be this Thursday night, 8:15, at the Feline Center at Wolf Trap. Tickets at wolftrap.org. Let me take another question for Eric Idle. We're going to go to Napa Valley. Mike, you're on with Eric Idle. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Mike. Eric, I just wanted to say I've been listening since 1972, and you and the rest of your friends in the Monty Python group, you brought me and my father together.
Oh, that's nice. That happens quite a bit, I'm happy to say.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the few things we ever agreed upon was the comedy you guys made.
Well, that's very nice. I think that's interesting that people pass on the comedy gene. I think it's very important that we all laugh, and if we can find the same things to laugh at, that's very bonding, I think, between father and son.
Thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it. You know, that leads me to a question. It's kind of an obvious question, but did you grow up in, was there a lot of comedy in your household? Was there a lot of that growing up?
I was at an English boarding school, an orphanage, from 7 till 19, so I would say that.
Not at all.
Wow.
You were waiting to break out.
Yes, there was a lot of comedy because when you're when you're kids, what you laugh at is authority. Uh-huh. So that's the way you get your revenge. You laugh at them.
Now
you have to do as they tell you.
You wrote you wrote by yourself primarily. You wrote a lot of the material alone. Were there, as far as the group was concerned, did John Cleese make Michael Palin laugh more, or did Graham Chapman make you laugh more? Did you have were there certain guys that could make the other guys in the band crack up easily?
It's a good question.
And I said the band.
Michael was always the sort of funniest at improvising and sitting around being funny. And John wrote probably the most specifically funny material. Mm-hmm. Detail, when he read it out, it was funny. But he would never give you a laugh for free.
Had to work for it.
I think of so many of the sketches you're in, Eric. Did you have one Python guy that you preferred working with if it was just a one-on-one scene?
Well,
at risk of making an enemy here.
I don't really know. I mean, it's such a long time. It's hard for people to realize it's 25 years since we worked together.
Sure.
So I work with John Dupre, and he's the one I make laugh.
That's good, too. And I said John Dupre. That was wonderful.
I was so glad that I said that.
Going back, do you still, and these are such jive questions, but I want to ask them anyway.
Yeah.
You had the reunion when you're all up on stage paying tribute to Graham. Do you keep track of the other guys at all?
Oh, yeah.
I
get the mail from everybody all the time. We're going to put a little book together next year because it's the 40th anniversary, as I said. So I'm editing it, and the people are sending me stuff and reminiscences of what it was like to perform live. So we're going to come out with a book, and we're going to do Not the Messiah as our 40th anniversary tribute at the Royal Albert Hall in October.
Wonderful.
So we'll have the BBC, and everything.
Well, we'll let you go here in a second, Eric, but you obviously influenced many current TV shows. The Simpsons really do come to mind. So many animated programs on now that seem to get that that comedy of the absurd. You've done a few voices on The Simpsons as well.
Yeah, I played the same sort of character. He's really the sort of character who's from The Ruttles, that sort of dreadful documentary filmmaker voice. But they always have me back. And it's always a pleasure to get the $15.
And you love the and you love the stage work, though. I mean, that seems to be what gets you going right now.
I prefer theater and stage, and because you can perfect it and get it right. And there's not so many things out of control like movies or TV.
Mm. And when you mention a 4-minute laugh when you did the tribute to Graham Chapman, obviously, when you've got a live audience in front of you, which is how you guys perform so often, that is more of a thrill ultimately when you're doing comedy.
Well, I love it. I mean, I love performing Not the Messiah. It's just fantastic to get big laughs in a concert hall. Nobody ever gets laughs in a concert hall. So it's just great to crack up the orchestra and have the choir choking away quietly at the back.
How many piece orchestra are we going to have?
Well, we got 106.
That's amazing.
That is worth it. I can't wait. I've got to go see the show.
I know. It's not like four guys and a guitar. You know what I mean?
Hey, you're bringing the trucks in. That's going to be a big deal.
We're serious about this.
Is there anyone or any show that you see today on American television that you say, hey, they've got it, they've got that special something? What are you watching nowadays?
I like The Concords, The Flight of the Concords.
Okay.
They make me laugh. They're New Zealand on HBO. The Mighty Boosh are an English group who are very silly. They're very funny.
Very
I love
silly.
Eddie Izzard anywhere.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, what an honor to have you on. I can't tell you, there are certain people that I have wanted to interview my entire life. I can notch this one in my belt right now. And I think there's a very good chance all of us are going to be in the audience for Not the Messiah this coming Thursday
absolutely.
Night.
Absolutely, and as a memorial to Terry Gilliam.
Oh, no! Let it go, Eric! Let it go!
Kill live on American Radio.
Frankly, I would have expected more of a hard time for John Duprez when I said that before.
He lives.
Good luck with the show, and we'd love to have you on again. Eric Idle, a true honor speaking to you, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
We love you.
That's Eric Idle, and I'll give you the show one more time. That's coming up this Thursday night, Wolf Trap, 8:15 at the Feline Center. Not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
Go see it.
Is there anyone that has a, and now I'm going to get it out of my system. Is there anyone that has a problem with my little scheme of marching up and down the square?
Actually, sir, I had a piano lesson.
Right, off you go.
I'm in.
Those guys, I love them. That was a lot of fun.
That's
really
so cool.
100 plus people up on stage.
Yeah.
Just doing Python crap.
God, wow. They're funny.
Oh, my God, I can't wait. All right, we'll take a short break, come back with the audio vault, and get to Eric Idle out of our system. We'll be back with more fun and more thrills on The Big Show.
Right. It's the Mike O'Mara Show.